ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. A jam-packed celebrity and newsmaker hotline this morning. Representative James Clyburn is from the Democrat of the great state of South Carolina.
Yes, House Majority Whip.
Exactly. Legal policy analyst for the Center for American Progress, and also Representative Jan Schakowsky, our favorite rockin' congresswoman from Illinois, on the Celebrity Hotline to talk about all things Sotomayor and healthcare. StephanieMiller.com, the website. Check it out. You can email us all there. Executive producer Crystal Boy, voice deity Jim Ward, or me, Stephanie Miller. This hour of the Stephanie Miller Show brought to you by Pontiac. The Pontiac summer closeout is here. Hurry to get the Pontiac you want before they're gone, like the 09 G6, the powerful G8, or the five-door Pontiac Vibe. Visit PontiacDealer.com. Take delivery by 7/31/09. See dealer for details. Oh, heavens, after enduring literally hours of Republican douchebaggery yesterday, yes. Judge Sonia Sotomayor at the
Many
hearings.
Senators have asked me about my judicial philosophy. Simple. Fidelity to the law. The task of a judge is not to make law. It is to apply the law.
Thank you. Take that, Lindsey Graham, you little panty waist.
It ain't a man's world. Mm.
Jeff Sessions was the biggest douche yesterday.
You think so?
Yeah.
It's quite a competition yesterday.
At least, you know, Lindsey Graham told her, yeah, unless you have a complete meltdown, you're going to get confirmed.
Think, is it Lindsey Graham that referred to her as the Hispanic element of this hearing?
I don't know about that.
Yeah, he mentioned there's the Hispanic element, but he said this is really more about politics. The president putting everyone on notice yesterday on health care.
I just want to put everybody on notice.
Hello.
Because there was a lot of chatter during the week that I was gone. We are going to get this done.
Hello now, and Representative Nancy Pelosi on the burgeoning CIA and Dick Cheney scandal.
It behooves the committees to take whatever actions they believe are necessary to get more information on that subject.
All right. Meanwhile, of course, day two today, it's starting in about 20 minutes, the Sotomayor hearings again, and health care heating up. If only there was someone in the thick of things that the... Who is it, Jim?
Well, from the great state of South Carolina, it's House Majority Whip James Clyburn.
Aren't we fancy? Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for taking time for us, as always.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, so what is your reaction to day one of the Sonia Sotomayor hearings?
Well, I feel pretty good about it. I think that she opened up on yesterday laying out for the American people exactly who and what she is at this current time. I think that so often we tend not to pay close attention to the substantive part of people's lives, and we tend to focus on sometimes what may be a throwaway line or what may be something to engender a certain endearment with an audience and try to use that to define folks. But I think that she defined herself very well for the American people on yesterday.
I do, too. And, certainly the reaction I'm hearing is, I just don't think the Republicans helped themselves yesterday in their comments to her. Do you?
No, they didn't help themselves at all, and I think that they have resigned to the fact that this is going to happen. I don't know why they will allow themselves to go out and run the risk of alienating such a large segment of our society, and I don't mean just as far as ethnicity is concerned, but I also mean as far as gender is concerned. So many people in this country believe that women bring a certain compassion to the decision-making process that men don't take time to bring. And so I think that having more women on this court, I'd love to see five of them as women, because I do believe it will reflect better not just the political makeup of the country, but with the capacity of the country to be compassionate.
So you disagree with Senator Day O'Connor. You think a wise old woman will make a better decision than a wise old man. Ultimately.
On many issues. I consult my wife very often. I have three daughters. I believe that they are very, very important to my decision-making process, and there are times when I need their perspective a little better than
right.
I need
well,
my two brothers.
You know, certainly Judge Ginsburg has made that distinction, you know, like in the strip search case of the 13-year-old girl. I mean, obviously we all bring our perspectives, and she's going to have a different perspective on that than all the male justices, correct?
Absolutely. And I think it's important for us to keep that in mind. And I don't believe that has anything to do with how you make decisions. I ran a quasi-judicial agency in South Carolina for almost 18 years. And everywhere you went, I did it for two Democrats and two Republicans under four governors. And people said to me all the time that they thought that I meted out decisions there at that agency in a way that was fair, even though it may have been firm. No one has ever accused me of allowing my proud heritage as an African-American growing up in a low-income community in Sumter, South Carolina, at a time when nobody thought the people from my community would ever go off to college and become much of anything. I'm proud of that. I'm proud of what my parents did to overcome what they experienced. And sure, that's a part of me. But you don't let that get in the way of
right.
looking at having to make an objective decision about something.
You know, I think it was Senator Feingold, Congressman, that made the point yesterday that, you know, you have to look at her record. I think they kept trying to say, oh, the Obama standard. I mean, President Obama, when he was senator, was judging whether it was Alito or others on their record. He wasn't taking comments out of context from a speech 15 years ago. I think Russ Feingold said yesterday, one attack I find particularly shocking is the suggestion she'll be biased against some litigants because of her racial or ethnic heritage. This charge is not based on anything in her judicial record because there's absolutely nothing in the hundreds of opinions she's written to support it. I mean, isn't that
absolutely.
That's the most critical thing. Look at her record.
That's exactly. The thing that's really gotten me in so much of this is that when President Obama said he wanted someone who could empathize. Now, my Lord, what is ethnic specific about empathy?
Right.
If you are looking down from the bench at a young white kid who has gone astray of the law, and you happen to be a Latina, you can empathize with that person if you've seen those kinds of experiences in your neighborhood. It doesn't have anything to do with being a gender or even ethnicity. It is all about being able to show some empathy, irrespective of what the law may say. That's why I think, and we are growing, those of us who believe that taking away judicial discretion, as we've done with all these mandatory minimums in the sentencing guidelines, it just does not allow for a judge to be a judge. You make the judge somewhat of a clerk, rather than to be able to apply judiciousness to the decision-making.
Congressman, let's turn to health care for a minute. President Obama, of course, issued a challenge yesterday to pass health care reform by August. Is it going to happen?
I think we'll pass bills out of both houses by August. I don't know that we will be able to reconcile the differences by August. I think that what we are trying to do is for both the House and the Senate to pass a bill before we take our August break. I think the Senate will be going 1 week into August. And then hopefully have our staffs and everybody else, the White House, working on reconciling the differences during the break and come back in September and get a conference report done for the American people. I think that's pretty much what the goal is, and I think we can do that.
Will it include a public option?
Oh, I think so. Now, the problem is a lot of people think you just got to call it that. I think they will have a public option, and they may not care the name of public option. I'm one of those who believe that we ought to call it a health security plan. The health care security plan is what I call it. And it will operate as a public option so that people will not be locked in to non-competitive rates.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we hope you will check in with us on as that debate continues. Thank you so much for taking time for us, Congressman. We appreciate it as always.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
All right, there he goes. Representative James Clyburn of the great state of South Carolina. He's a whip, you know.
Yes, he's in charge of getting all the Democrats in line to vote for the damn thing.
Oh, there's
when the
a
whip
job.
Comes down.
There's a job.
Yeah.
Keeping Democrats in line.
Exactly.
Good luck.
And herding cats.
All right. We have Ian Millhauser.
Heiser. Ian Millhauser.
Doesn't matter. The important thing is he's a legal policy analyst for the Center for American Progress, and he's coming right up on the Celebrity Hotline to handicap these Sotomayor hearings next before they start again live today. 20 minutes after the hour, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Whoa, that was cool!
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 21 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-1-2, the phone number toll free from anywhere. Minutes away from day number two of the Sonia Sotomayor hearings. I believe we had a right-wing caller yesterday, Chris, that offered the opinion that us calling the Republicans douche nozzles did not constitute legal analysis.
No.
Whatever.
But
okay.
They kind of were.
Hmm. Okay. Well, just for that. Legal analysis. What? Why? Maybe it's someone qualified to offer such.
Well, it's the legal policy analyst for the Center for American Progress, Ian Millhauser.
Ha ha! Take that, right-wing douche nozzle callers.
Some actual analysis.
Good morning, Ian.
Good morning. How you doing, Stephanie?
Good, sir. Thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, sure. It's glad to be here. I'm glad to be here.
What was your reaction to day one yesterday?
Well, you remember Willie Horton, the African-American
yeah.
person who became an ad in that took down Dukakis?
Yep.
Well, they're trying to turn Sotomayor into Willie Horton in a black robe. you know, all of their attacks have been claiming that she can't be impartial, mostly in areas of race. And, you know, it's an amusing attack. It's just not true.
Right.
Even this Ricci case that they keep bringing up. You know, in 1984, Judge Sotomayor's court decided a case that was virtually identical to Ricci, and they ruled in favor of the employer. The funny thing about being a lower court judge, you're not allowed to ignore precedent. If
right.
she had done so, she would have been the same kind of judicial activist they like to attack her
Ian,
as being.
Thank you. Isn't that exactly the point, that it's the Supreme Court that just engaged in judicial activism by overturning the precedent in this case?
Yeah, that's exactly right. They completely changed the law. You know, they changed the law so much that a judge named Richard Griffin on the Sixth Circuit, who's a George W. Bush appointee, recently wrote an opinion agreeing with Sotomayor and Ricci, not because Griffin has any particular hatred of the white man, but because Griffin understood that he is also a lower court judge. So, you know, it seems like the Republican attack here is, hey, let's go after her because she's not activist enough.
Well, isn't that the point that somebody made yesterday, that, you know, activism is, you know, when they decide not the way you feel? You know, I mean, obviously, many Republicans don't want us to respect precedent in Roe v. Wade. They want that to be overturned, you know?
Oh, and it's not even Roe where you see this. You know, Justice Alito wrote an opinion this term where he said that drug companies should have complete immunity from the law when one of their dangerous products poisons a patient that uses it. John Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts, wrote an opinion where he said that it's perfectly okay for a wealthy businessman to spend $3 million to literally buy a judge so that he can get a verdict overturned that he doesn't like.
Mm.
So, you know, I think that all these people are attacking Sotomayor need to take the plank out of their own eye before they look at the speck in hers.
So speaking of which, that's a perfect setup for my next question, because my favorite headline today that I saw, Alberto Gonzalez, Sotomayor should explain herself to the GOP. I'm sorry. The worst attorney general we've ever had that should be explaining himself in several courts of law about several illegal things that happened at his behest, right?
I think that there's an epidemic. I mean, it just shows how a disarray conservatives are. You know, the person they picked to be their principal point person against the first Latina nominee in U.S. history is Jeff Sessions, who himself was denied a seat on the federal bench because of his own history of race. He called the NAACP a communist and un-American organization. He once told an African-American attorney that worked for him that he better watch what he says to white women. So, yep. You know, this is the guy that they put forward to attack us? Are you serious?
Yeah, which lent particular hilarity to this yesterday.
Who believes it is acceptable for a judge to allow their personal background, gender, prejudices, or sympathies to sway their decision in favor of or against parties before the court.
Oh,
by the way, Zeke Heil.
He who once said that he didn't think the KKK was so bad until he realized he heard they smoke pot.
This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Or worse, he may know exactly what he's talking about, and he still could be pushing the same agenda that he had in 1986. But, the bottom line is this. Sotomayor has followed the law consistently throughout her time on the bench. And if you look at discrimination claims, she rules against the discrimination plaintiff 8 out of 9 times as a lower court judge. So it's just not possible to believe that she found this one firefighter and she decided she hated him so much that she was going to break with her entire record.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, that's the important thing, isn't it, Ian? It's her record. You know, they kept trying to, I think, use this hearing as an opportunity to bash President Obama, didn't they? They're like, oh, well, if we were using the Obama standard, then. But, you know, the judges he voted against, it was because of their record. It wasn't because of something they said in the speech 15 years ago taken out of context, right?
They kept bringing up Miguel Estrada, who is a George W. Bush appointee who was not brought onto the D.C. Circuit because the Senate rejected his nomination. The only thing that Estrada is very right-wing. The only thing that he has in common with Sotomayor is his race. But they seem to think that the two of them are exactly the same.
Yes, which just proves their racism, doesn't it?
Exactly. They want to go after her for, you know, not treating people as individuals. And then what do? They confound her and Estrada. And, again, the only thing that they have in common is their race.
Right. Well, you know, it was like the Republicans putting forth Sarah Palin. It's like, look, she's just like Hillary. You know what I mean? It's like proving their inherent sexism, right?
No, that's exactly right. And you see this with all of their attacks. George H.W. Bush introduced Clarence Thomas to the country, he said, you know, I love this judge. He has such great empathy.
Empathy
is a bad word.
Exactly. As my co-host here, Jim Ward, said when they made Michael Steele their chairman, it's like, you do get that it's not just any black guy, right? You know, it literally, they're so transparent, I think, playing race politics. It's almost hilarious.
And the good news is I think the American people are going to see through it. You know,
absolutely.
There was a poll a while back that said that only 8% of the country thinks Sotomayor is a racist. So there's
Ian, we're out of time. Thank you so much for coming on with us.
Thank you, Stephanie.
All right. Back live with the hearings next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Oh, man. What an attractive woman.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 33 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. As we go live to the Sonia Sotomayor hearings that have just started.
And respect the Constitution must receive in the judging process, and an understanding that respect is guided by and should be guided by a full appreciation of the limited jurisdiction of the court in our system of government, but understanding its importance as well. That is the central part of judging. What my experience is on the trial court and the appellate court have reinforced for me is that the process of judging is a process of keeping an open mind. It's the process of not coming to a decision with a prejudgment of an outcome.
Oh, no.
and that reaching a conclusion has to start with understanding what the parties are arguing, but examining in all situations carefully the facts as they prove them or not prove them, the record as they create it, and then making a decision that is limited to what the law says on the facts before the judge.
Well, you, let's go into some of the
Senator Leahy
particulars on this. One of the things that I found appealing in your records is that you were a prosecutor, as many of us, both the ranking member and I, had that privilege. And you worked on the front lines as an assistant district attorney in the Manhattan DA's office. One, your former boss, District Attorney Robert Morgenthau, the dean of the American prosecutors, said one of the most important cases you worked on was the prosecution of the man known as the Tarzan burglar. He terrorized people in Harlem. He would swing on ropes into their apartments and rob them and steal and actually killed three people. Your co-counsel, Hugh Moll, described how you threw yourself into every aspect of the investigation, the prosecution, the case. You helped to secure a conviction, sentence of 62 years to life for the murders. Your co-counsel described you, quote, as a skilled legal practitioner who not only ruthlessly pursued justice for victims of violent crimes, but understood the root cause of crime and how to curb it.
That doesn't seem empathetic.
No. Did that experience shape your views in any way, as both as a lawyer, but also as a judge?
It's almost like she thinks murderers should go to jail.
About as nitty gritty as you could into the whole area of criminal law.
I became a lawyer in the prosecutor's office. To this day, I owe who I have become. Who I became as a lawyer and who I have become as a judge, to Mr. Morgenthau. He gave me a privilege and honor in working in his office that has shaped my life. When I say I became a lawyer in his office, it's because in law school, law schools teach you on hypotheticals. They set forth facts for you. They give you a little bit of teaching on how those facts are developed, but not a whole lot. And then they ask you to opine about legal theory and apply legal theory to the facts before you. Well, when you work in a prosecutor's office, you understand that the law is not legal theory. It's facts. It's what witnesses say and don't say. It's how you develop the your position in the record, and then it's taking those facts and making arguments based on the law as it exists. That's what I took with me as a trial judge. It's what I take with me as an appellate judge. It is respect that each case gets decided case by case, applying the law as it exists to the facts before you. You asked me a second question about the Tarzan murderer case.
Tarzan. And I was wrong.
Someone murdered Tarzan?
Brought to life
pay attention.
For me in
Sorry.
A way that perhaps no other case had fully done before. The tragic consequences of needless death. In that case, Mr. Maddox was dubbed the Tarzan murderer by the press because he used acrobatic feats to gain entry into apartments. In one case, he took a rope, placed it on a pipe on top of a roof, put a paint can at the other end, and threw it into a window in a building below and broke the window. He then swung himself into the apartment and on the other side shot a person he found. He did that repeatedly. And as a result, he destroyed families. I saw a family that had been intact with a mother living with three of her children, some grandchildren. They all worked at various jobs. Some were going to school. They stood as they watched one of their, the mother stood as she watched one of her children be struck by a bullet that Mr. Maddox fired killed him because the bullet struck the middle of his head. That family was destroyed. They scattered to the four winds, and only one brother remained in New York who could testify. That case taught me that prosecutors, as all participants in the justice system, must be sensitive to the price that crime imposes on our entire society. At the same time, as a prosecutor in that case, I had to consider how to ensure that the presentation of that case would be fully understood by jurors. And to do that, it was important for us as prosecutors to be able to present those number of incidences that Mr. Maddox had engaged in one trial, so the full extent of his conduct could be determined by a jury. There had never been a case quite like that, where an individual who used different acrobatic feats to gain entry into an apartment was tried with all of his crimes in one indictment. I researched very carefully the law and found a theory in New York law called the Molyneux theory then that basically said if you can show a pattern that established a person's identity or assisted in establishing a person's identity, simplifying the argument, by the way, then you can try different cases together. This was not a conspiracy under law because Mr. Maddox acted alone, so I had to find a different theory to bring all his acts together. Well, I presented that to the trial judge. It was a different application of the law, but what I did was draw on the principles of the Molyneux theory. And arguing those principles to the judge,
Carl
the judge
Rose said she wasn't very smart.
That joint trial of all of Mr. Maddox's activities.
And she's a compelling speaker.
In
my
the end,
God.
Carefully developing the facts in the case, making my record, our record, I should say, Mr. Moe's and my record complete, we convinced the judge that our theory was supported by law. That harkens back to my earlier answer, which is that's what being a trial judge teaches you.
And you...
I think even Lindsey Graham can understand that.
Yeah.
So you see it from both ends, having obviously to a novel theory, and now a theory that is well established in the law, but novel at that time. But you also, as a trial judge, you've seen theories brought in by prosecutors or by defense, and you have to make your decisions based on those. So that fairly easy answer to that is you do you not?
Well, it's important to remember that as a judge, I don't make law. And so the task for me as a judge is not to accept or not accept new theories. It's to decide whether the law as it exists principles that apply to new situations.
Well, let's go into that because obviously the Tarzan case was a unique case, and as I said, Mr. Morgenthau singled that out as an example of the kind of lawyer you are.
All right, we'll take a break while Pat Leahy sobers up. I'm kidding. 43 minutes after the hour.
Stephanie Louise Miller.
You said it during the commercial break. Come on.
I didn't say anything of that sort.
43 minutes after the hour. Right back with more of the Sonia Sotomayor hearings live on the Stephanie Miller Show.
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 48 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere, as we rejoin the Sonia Sotomayor hearings live.
But which didn't have a disparate impact. And so the question before the panel was the decision of the city based on race or based on its understanding of what the law required it to do? Given Second Circuit precedent, Bushy versus New York State Civil Services Commission, the panel concluded that the city's decision in that particular situation was lawful under established law. The Supreme Court, in looking and reviewing that case, applied a new standard. In fact, it announced that it was applying a standard from a different area of law and explaining to employers and the courts below how to look at this question in the future.
But when you were deciding it, you had precedent from the Supreme Court and from your circuit that basically determined the outcome you had to come up with. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
And if today, now that the Supreme Court has changed their decision, without you having to relitigate the case, it would lay open, obviously, a different result.
Clearly.
Certainly a circuit would be bound by the new decision. Even though it's only a 5-4 decision, a circuit...
Leahy's asking good questions. He was a prosecutor in a former life.
Absolutely, sir.
Good. Then get prosecuting the Bush administration.
Yeah, damn it.
The Supreme Court of how employers in the court should examine this issue.
During the course of this nomination, there have been some unfortunate comments, including outrageous charges of racism made about you on radio and television. One person referred to you as being the equivalent of the head of the Ku Klux Klan. Another leader in the other party referred to you as being a bigot, and to the credit of the senators, the Republican senators, as well as Democratic senators, they have not repeated those charges. But you haven't been able to respond to any of these things. You've had to be quiet. Your critics have taken a line out of your speeches and twisted it, in my view, to mean something you never intended. You said that, quote, you would hope that a wise Latina woman with the richness of her experiences would reach wise decisions. I remember other justices, the most recent one, Justice Alito, talking about the experience of his immigrants in his family and how that would influence his thinking on help him reach decisions. And you also said in your speech, as quote, that you love America and value its lessons, that great things could be achieved if one works hard for it. And then you said judges must transcend their personal sympathies and prejudices and aspire to achieve a greater degree of fairness and integrity based on the reason of law. And there's one more quote in there, is what you told me, that ultimately and completely the law is what counts, or law is what controls. So tell us, you've heard all these charges and countercharges.
Today we are all wise Latina women.
Exactly. Thank you.
Here's your chance.
See.
You tell us what's going on here, Judge.
Thank you for giving me an opportunity to explain my remarks.
No, she's been wanting to for a while.
Words I have ever spoken
up.
Or
yeah.
written have received so much attention. I gave a variant of my speech to a variety of different groups, most often to groups of women lawyers or to groups, most particularly, of young Latino lawyers and students. As my speech made clear in one of the quotes that you referenced, I was trying to inspire them to believe that their life experiences would enrich the legal system, because different life experiences and backgrounds always do. I don't think that there is a quarrel with that in our society. I was also in trying to inspire them to believe that they could become anything they wanted to become, just as I had. The context of the words that I spoke have created a misunderstanding, and I want a misunderstanding, and to give everyone assurances, I want to state up front, unequivocally and without doubt, I do not believe that any ethnic, racial, or gender group has an advantage in sound judging. I do believe that every person has an equal opportunity to be a good mm-hmm. and wise judge, regardless of their background or life experiences. What the
She's
words
good.
That I used agreeing with the sentiment that Justice Sandra Day O'Connor was attempting to convey. I understood that sentiment to be what I just spoke about, which is that both men and women were equally capable of being wise and fair judges. That has to be what she meant, because judges disagree about legal outcomes all of the time, or I shouldn't say all of the time, at least in close cases they do. Justices on the Supreme Court come to different conclusions. It can't mean that one of them is unwise, despite the fact that some people think that. So her literal words couldn't have meant what they said. She had to have meant that she was talking about the equal value of the capacity to be fair and impartial.
Well, and isn't that what you've been on the bench for 17 years? Have you set your goal to be fair and show integrity based on the law?
I believe my 17-year record on the two courts would show that in every case that I render, I first decide what the law requires under the facts before me, and that what I do is explain to litigants why the law requires a result, and whether their position is sympathetic or not, I explain why the result is commanded by law.
And doesn't your oath of office actually require you to do that?
That is the fundamental job of a judge.
Good. Let me talk to you about another decision that's been talked about, District of Columbia versus Heller. And that one, the Supreme Court held that the Second Amendment guarantees to Americans a right to keep and bear arms, and that it's an individual right. I've owned firearms since my early teen years. I suspect a large majority of Vermonters do. I enjoy target shooting on a very regular basis at our home in Vermont. So I watched that decision.
Well, if I want to be around Patrick Leahy while he's going target shooting.
Run! And interesting. And
I want to be his clay pigeon.
Yeah.
Is it safe to say that you accept the Supreme Court's decision as establishing that the Second Amendment right is an individual
right?
Let me
answer
that
for her. Yes, she was following a Supreme Court precedent in that case. 57 minutes after the hour. Right back.
She's
on
so
the
empathetic.
Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
I'm
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. StephanieMiller.com, the website. Check it out. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris LaVoy, voice DD Jim Moore, to me, Stephanie Miller, Representative Jan Schakowsky. Coming up on the Celebrity Hotline, this hour of the Stephanie Miller Show brought to you by Pontiac. The Pontiac Summer Closeout is here. Hurry to get the Pontiac you want before they're gone, like the 09 G6, the powerful G8, or the five-door Pontiac Vibe. Visit PontiacDealer.com. Take delivery by 7/31/09. See dealer for details. Thank you. I would like to go now live to Senator Jeff Sessions, noted racist, questioning Sonia Sotomayor. By the way, quick fun fact, he is not only hostile to the very notion of civil rights, that's why he was not confirmed himself as a judge. An African-American attorney who worked with him recalled being called boy by Sessions and being told to, quote, be careful what you say to white folks, after Sessions overheard him chastising a white secretary. Those are some fun facts as we go to Jeff Sessions.
Apply the law and not make the law. Whether I've agreed with a party or not, found them sympathetic or not, in every case I have decided, I have done what the law requires. With respect to judges making policy, I assume, Senator, that you were referring to a remark that I made in a Duke law student dialogue. That remark, in context, made very clear that I wasn't talking about the policy reflected in the law that Congress makes. That's the job of Congress, to decide what the policy should be for society. In that conversation with the students, I was focusing on what district court judges do and what circuit court judges do. And I noted that district court judges find the facts, and they apply the facts to the individual case. And when they do that, their holding, their finding, doesn't bind anybody else. Appellate judges, however, establish precedent. They decide what the law says in a particular situation.
I'm glad she's speaking slowly
that
so he can understand.
That precedent has policy ramifications because it binds not just the litigants in that case, it binds all litigants in similar cases and cases that may be
day two, and he still looks
president.
Like an angry leprechaun.
I think if my speech is heard,
he's concerned she won't have empathy toward the angry leprechaun.
Yes.
That YouTube presents.
I got my gold.
Full context examine. That is very clear.
Blah, blah, blah,
that
whatever.
I was talking about the policy ramifications of precedent, and never talking about appellate judges or courts.
He was channeling Jeff Sessions.
That Congress needs.
Judge, I would just say I don't think it's that clear. I looked at that tape several times, and I think a person could reasonably believe it meant more than that. But yesterday you spoke about your approach to rendering
opinions. Can we just dismiss her whole answer?
To strengthen both the rule of law and faith in the impartiality of the justice system, and I would agree. But you have previously said this. I'm willing to accept that we who judge must not deny differences resulting from experiences and heritage, but attempt, as the Supreme Court suggests, continuously to judge when those opinions, sympathies, and prejudices are appropriate. So first I'd like to know, do you think there's any circumstance in which a judge should allow their prejudices to impact their decision making?
Never their prejudices. I was talking about the very important goal of the justice system is to ensure that the personal biases and prejudices of a judge do not influence the outcome of a case.
I was saying the opposite.
What I was talking about was the obligation of judges to examine what they're feeling as they're adjudicating a case and to ensure that that's not influencing the outcome. Life experiences have to influence you. We're not robots to listen to evidence and have feelings. We have to recognize those feelings.
He looks like the robot in Terminator while he's watching
that's
her, doesn't he?
Speech was saying, that's our job.
But the statement was, I willingly accept that we who judge must not deny the differences resulting from experience and heritage, but continuously to judge when those opinions, sympathies, and prejudices are appropriate. That's exactly opposite of what you're saying, is it not?
I don't believe so, Senator, because all I was saying is because we have feelings and different experiences, we can be led to believe that our experiences are appropriate. We have to be open-minded to accept that they may not be, and that we have to judge always that we're not letting those things determine the outcome. But there are situations in which some experiences are important in the process of judging because the law asked us to use those experiences.
Well, I understand that.
Justice Alito said the same thing.
In your statement that you want to do what you can to increase the faith in the impartiality of our system, but isn't it true this statement suggests that you accept that there may be sympathies, prejudices, and opinions that legitimately can influence a judge's decision? And how can that further faith in the impartiality of the system?
I think the system is strengthened when judges don't assume they're impartial, but when judges test themselves to identify when their emotions are driving a result or their experiences are driving a result, then the law is not.
I agree with that. I know one judge that says that if he has a feeling about a case, he tells his law clerks to watch me. I do not want my biases, sympathies, or prejudices to influence this decision, which I've taken an oath to make sure is impartial.
The angry leprechaun wants us all to be robots.
That what you're saying today is quite inconsistent with your statement that you willingly accept that your sympathies, opinions, and prejudices.
That is so weird. He looks like the what's his name, the actor? The robot in Terminator. The evil Terminator.
Robert Patrick.
Yes. He's going to melt into a little pool next.
You think he looks like Robert Patrick? His ears.
An older one, yeah.
Believe that I'm acting without
an older, rounder one.
Looking at them and testing that I'm not.
She's going to reduce him to a little puddle of molten lava.
Doing the exact thing I don't want to do.
Mercury.
Pardon me.
Which
Mercury.
Is to let something but the law.
And then he will reform after the lunch break.
The only way to kill him is to pour him into a vat of molten steel.
Your decisions have always been made to serve the larger.
All right, let's take a break from. All right, from his right-wing douchebaggery today. All right.
Yes, Anne Marie Cox just tweeted, "We're not robots. Angry Leprechaun wants his robots."
All right.
And you're not getting me Lucky Charms either.
And she already told him yesterday, Sonia Sotomayor.
My personal and professional experiences helped me to listen and understand, with the law always commanding the result in every case.
Here is yesterday's douchebaggery from Senator Jeff Sessions.
Do we have to?
Mm-hmm. Senator
Call Jeff it empathy, call it prejudice, or call it sympathy. But whatever it is, it's not law. In truth, it's more akin to politics, and politics has no place in the courtroom.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and yesterday, Dick Cheney's demon seed, Liz Cheney.
Oh, yeah.
His harpy of a daughter.
Yeah, she's a bit of a harpy.
Mm-hmm. Talking about the fact that her father's been caught in yet another round of illegal whatever.
They don't want to have to deal with the fact that President Bush and Vice President Cheney kept the nation safe for 8 years. They don't want to have to address that. So instead, they want to go
Except
after and attack
time.
The programs.
Oh,
and now we hear that they are, in fact, going to try to prosecute potentially the men and women who carried out those programs.
Your father's a war criminal. Anyway, all right.
And she's a bit of a skank.
Mm. Okay. Stephanie Miller, pardon me, Jim, go ahead.
Well, see, he wanted assassination squads to go after al-Qaeda leaders, which, you know, maybe they should be executed once you get information from them.
Yes.
I think he wanted them to shut the hell up because they don't, you know, didn't want people to know exactly how 9/11 really happened.
Well, and point of order, that's illegal, not telling Congress.
There's that.
Just
exactly.
Saying.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. StephanieMiller.com, the website. You can email us all there. Executive producer, Crystal Boy Voice, Deity, Jim Ward, and me, Stephanie Miller. Check out the calendar section. Mama will be in San Francisco July 25th and August 8th in Seattle. Check out and get tickets for those events. Meanwhile, Brenda writes, Stephanie, I had nothing to do for a few minutes, so I went online and found a website that gave video footage of your career. Oh, dear. That is a sadder life than mine.
That must have been a short segment.
Why, you're not a foul-mouthed slut as you pretend. You're just a dorky, nice girl from a good family that likes dirty jokes.
Computer 13.
That's actually true, Brenda. Yeah. Thank you.
Actually, your career is all over the YouTubes.
Well, referring to it a career is generous, and thank you for that. All right, let's...
even your 1989 Evening at the Improv appearance.
Oh, all right, let's check some news we don't want to lose, shall we? Here we go.
Yippee, yippee. It's time for stand-up news. And now, here's anchor person Stephanie Miller.
Thank you. When news breaks here at Stays Broken, our top story. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner is using a trip to Europe and the Middle East this week to shore up confidence in the U.S. economy and the dollar. Though he warned Monday the struggle to squelch the global recession is far from over, we have Secretary Geithner.
America is strong and resilient, and Americans can bounce back from just about anything. We've had the worst economic downturn since the Great Depression, but I have faith in our stamina and stick-to-itiveness. But at the same time, I must caution the people of this great land not to get your hopes up too high right now, because even with the stimulus package that is in effect, we need to pay attention to the signs of risk and stagnation that are also still in effect. We take hope from the fact that economic giants have their priorities straight, as evidenced by their refusal to make loans to ordinary Americans while awarding themselves gigantic bonuses. That's very heartening. But there is still uncertainty as to whether the taxpayer will cough up the billions needed to cover our markets for our profligate ways. If we have to actually eat the crap we cooked up, we could very well be reduced to behaving sanely in the capital markets. We're just not equipped for that. My old firm Goldman Sachs, for instance, would implode without its super secret trading software that gives us the results of trades before they happen. Waiting to see how an investment pans out before cashing out? Goldman Sachs don't play that. No, you'll all just have to forgo those credit cards, that college education, the new car, and the cancer surgery until we of the U.S. Treasury subdivision of Goldman Sachs find new and different ways of screwing you until you die. By the way, you know why it's called Goldman Sachs? It's because we've got the gold, man, and we own your Sachs. Hope you find a refrigerator box of The View, chumps.
Wow, you found a way to make Tim Geithner funny.
That's yay.
When you told me that you were going to be doing Tim Geithner for stand-up news, I'm like, ew.
Really?
Oh. Wow.
Yeah, it was hard to decide which story is funnier, that one or this one. Just focus on the comedy in the first part of this headline and not the second part of the headline.
Okay.
Kim Jong-il reportedly has pancreatic cancer.
Kim Jong-il funny.
Cancer?
Not so much. So let's see what Jim does with this one.
All right. A report in South Korean media is fueling the ongoing speculation about the deteriorating health of North Korean leader Kim Jong-il. YTN News reports the 67-year-old leader has pancreatic cancer. He appeared at a July 8th ceremony to commemorate the 15th anniversary of his father's death. He seemed frail and gaunt at that aforementioned. Do we have dear leader? Yes, we do.
Yeah, to the G, to the I, L, in the hizzy. Yes, I still am in the hizzy. Kim Jong, not ill at all. Elvis had not left the building. Reports of my demise have been greatly exaggerated, to paraphrase Samuel Clemens. Pancreatic cancer, my ass. I'm as healthy as a horse. If you could find a horse in People's Republic of North Korea, we turned them into bulgogi and shoe leather a long time ago. They're not the first time Western news media erroneously exaggerated my medical condition. One time a Tom Brokaw said I had rickets. Katie Couric claimed I had Raynaud disease, whatever that is. Dan Rather said I had the rectal bleeding.
Oh.
Okay, that one true, but only because I accidentally sat on a cactus. Sometimes I get reflux or laryngitis if I drink too much of a rag of urine. So don't count me out, Western propaganda machine. Kim, I'm gonna live forever. I'm gonna learn how to fly.
Kim out. Gah!
Oh, dear.
Is he dead? Is he alive? You don't know. You're a cliffhanger.
The only thing we care about here at the Stephanie Miller Newscast is, does whatever you have a lot of R's in it?
Yeah.
Like, for instance, rheumatoid.
Rheumatard. That's what you have. Rheumatard arthritis.
That's all for stand-up news.
Okay, yeah, we need to break. Break now.
Yeah, I think now's good.
Yeah.
Okay. If you want more of that Jim Ward falderall, you can go to StephanieMiller.com. Yes, right. There's a title ad for the thing.
Guy,
21 minutes after the hour. Back with more of the Sonia Sotomayor hearings live on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Are you having a party or something?
Non-stop.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it, 25 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number toll free from anywhere. Rebecca Madison on her reaction to the Sotomayor hearings today. Hello, Rebecca.
Hey, Mama. Hey, hey. Mooks.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah, so I'm wondering if this Jeff Sessions guy just, like, didn't live through the 50s or never went to college or what's going on, but that whole idea that a straight white man's opinion is neutral and everyone else is just completely out there.
Yeah, it's biased.
Like, hello, did you not read a book when you were in school? That
yeah.
idea kind of went out of vogue a while ago. And he seems genuinely befuddled, like, wait a minute, she's brown and she's a woman. How did she get to be a judge? It's very confusing to me.
Do we allow that?
Yes.
All right, honey, thank you. We rejoin the Sonia Sotomayor hearings live.
He doesn't argue to us in the case before us. And because the case before us was based on existing precedent. So it's a different test.
Judge, there was a apparently unease within your panel. I was really disappointed, and I think a lot of people have been, that the opinion was so short. It was per curiam. It did not discuss the serious legal issues that the case raised. And I believe that's legitimate criticism of what you did. But it appears, according to Stuart Taylor, the respected legal writer for the National Journal, that Stuart Taylor concluded that it appears that Judge Cabranes was concerned about the outcome of the case, was not aware of it because it was a per curiam, unpublished opinion, but it began to raise the question of whether rehearing should be granted. You say you're bound by the superior authority, but the fact is when the question of rehearing that Second Circuit authority that you say covered the case, some says it didn't cover so clearly, but that was up for debate. And the circuit voted, and you voted not to reconsider the prior case. You voted to stay with the decision of the circuit. And, in fact, your vote was the key vote. Had you voted with Judge Cabranes, himself a Puerto Rican ancestry, had you voted with him...
Oh, my God. That's relevant how?
You could have changed that case. So, in truth, you weren't bound by that case. Had you seen
God.
It a different way, you must have agreed.
God. He's all, you know, Hispanic-y, like you.
He was just looking out for them Hispanics.
He's
a racist bastard.
Wow,
he
you're
really
right.
Is.
He probably is thinking, go make me a Quesadillo, Esperanza. Wow. 28 minutes after the hour, right back with Jan Schakowsky on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
I didn't need any help because I'm naturally perky and quite fascinating.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 33 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number toll free from anywhere. What the Fox? The headline is Fox News says Republicans shouldn't spend dwindling capital on Sotomayor showdown.
I guess Jeff Sessions didn't get the memo.
As the Republicans continue to spend their dwindling capital.
Now, all you Puerto Ricans, y'all think alike, right?
Wow! Did you guys just hear that?
He's a racist.
He just mentioned to her that she disagreed with someone on her court who was also Puerto Rican. Had to point out to her that he was also Puerto Rican like her. And so he assumed all y'all think alike.
What
but
a moron.
Clearly that
wow.
was shocking to him that she might disagree with someone else of Puerto Rican descent. Okay. Wow. Wow.
Oh, okay. My God.
If only there was someone else that could chime in on what's happening in the Capitol today. Yes.
From the great state of Illinois, where all three of us have lived at different points.
That's right.
Representative Jan Schakowsky.
If only we lived in the parts she represented. Good morning, Congresswoman.
Hi.
How are you?
Hi, good.
Wow. I do not think the Republicans are helping themselves this morning in the Sonia Sotomayor hearings. I don't know if you've been watching.
Mm-mm.
Oh, boy.
I take it from you. I'm sure you're right.
Ow. Wow. Jeff Sessions felt that he needed to point out to Judge Sotomayor that someone else that she had worked with was also Puerto Rican like her.
Unbelievable. Well, yeah, you're right. They all have the same memo every day. Puerto Rican memo.
Yeah. Wow. She is incredibly well-spoken and smart, don't you think?
And qualified, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the most experienced nominee we've ever had.
Correct.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
She's going to be. So all they can do is embarrass themselves, I think.
Yeah. As Lindsey Graham said, unless she has a complete meltdown, which I don't know if that was a sexist comment or not. Anyway. So, Congresswoman, update us on what's happening with health care, because, you know, we hear a lot of different reports on what's going on. The president said yesterday, you know, don't bet against this. We are going to get this done.
And I hope what the president has said is going to inspire people to call their congressman, get involved, because here's what we're offering people. We are going to lift the burden off of people who worry that they're going to be unable to get health insurance because of a pre-existing condition, that they're going to go bankrupt because of their out-of-pocket costs. All of that will be gone, that they will be able to leave their job and become entrepreneurs without worrying about, am I going to lose my health insurance? The freedom that this will give Americans, the sense of peace and security that it'll give Americans is a great thing. Now, having said that, we're arguing over what I think are small items that there are some even within the Democratic Party who are jeopardizing, I think, the robustness of this bill, particularly the public health insurance option, which is absolutely required in order to compete with the insurance companies, keep them honest, and bring the costs down.
Thank you. Well, he's not talking to you because you're neither a naysayer or a cynic. But
for those naysayers and cynics who think that this is not going to happen, don't bet against us.
I love that.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, you know, even those of us on the left, Congresswoman, are getting nervous, like you say, because, you know, this letter from the Blue Dog Democrats, and, you know, it gets very nerve-wracking thinking, God, are enough Democrats going to back down that we're not going to get a public option?
Well, the thing, I can't imagine at the end of the day, Democrats going home to their districts and saying, well, I voted against this because I wasn't for a public option, or this. I think there's more danger, and that's what I think the electorate has to explain to their congressmen. There is more danger in doing nothing and being naysayers and obstructionists than there is, because I don't think there is any danger, in passing health care reform. I don't understand what message isn't getting through, because it's not just 50 million people, that's a significant number, that don't have health insurance. It's all the rest of the people who find out, oh yeah, I thought I was insured, but whoops, it's not going to cover this surgery, or they're excluding my breasts, or they're excluding my prostate, or they're excluding this or that or the other, and I can't be covered to take care of my health care problem. Mm-hmm. That's what's going on in this country.
Well, it seems like, you know, one of the major concerns recently is you know, runaway medical costs, that the health care overhaul won't cut costs. Well, what is your take on that, and what's going
to... That is exactly why we need to have this public health insurance option. So, look, the insurance companies have been exempt from antitrust laws, the McCarran-Ferguson antitrust law. They, and Major League Baseball, and I think railroads, are excluded. They're the only industries. So they can set prices. They can have exclusionary markets. And the American Medical Association says 94% of markets in this country are non-competitive when it comes to health care. Well, that's why we need to inject some competition that will actually drive prices down. Do they need to pay their CEOs $12 million a year? I don't think so. Do they they need to make huge, enormous profits? I don't think so. We're talking about healthcare. It is not our obligation to prop up the insurance industry. They need to compete on a playing field that will help to control costs, not do double-digit inflation every year in their premiums. So this is why we need to control the cost through a public health insurance option.
Congresswoman Schakowsky, I quoted you the other day, as I do almost daily, and then I say my close personal friend.
Oh, that's good.
Congresswoman.
I say that about you as well.
Yeah, except I'm making it up. But you said that obviously, you know, all of this, the CIA and Dick Cheney revelations vindicate Nancy Pelosi. Your reaction to Bill O'Reilly and Karl Rove last night?
It's all about the economy. Economy's going south. Things aren't working out. This is the best diversion that the Democrats, you know, the far left zealots, can come up with.
I think you may be right that that's in the minds of some, but I think it's got a more immediate effect of trying to protect Nancy Pelosi, who's still under fire for having said the CIA lied to her.
Under fire by whom?
Am I in some kind of weird parallel universe, Congresswoman? Hasn't she really just been vindicated?
They are. No, yes. They are in a weird parallel universe. I've been on the Intelligence Committee for 2.5 years. There have been at least 4 incidents. You know about 3 of them. This latest, the fact of a shoot down of a Peruvian plane, destroying the tapes of the interrogations, where the CIA either lied, failed to tell us, or misled us. I don't know what you call a pattern, but,
yeah,
you know, it starts to develop.
But on direct orders from Vice President Cheney, which is illegal.
That is true.
I mean, I don't understand why we, you know, people are like, oh, well, we'll have to see if this might not be legal. I mean, how much clearer could it be, and how much more clear could it be that Nancy Pelosi has been vindicated in what she said?
Well, not only that, but the Republicans as well as the Democrats on the committee have been outraged when we find out by watching CNN or reading it in the New York Times or maybe the Stephanie Miller Show about something that we were not told about. And so I don't know what fantasy world they are living in. This has been a pattern of the intelligence community to resist communicating with the Congress. No one who's been involved can deny that.
Congresswoman, I don't even, maybe I'm naive, but I don't even see how this could be a partisan issue. I assume a Republican Congress would not want to be lied to by a Democratic president, CIA.
What happens in the committee. People are, you've got to be kidding me. Why didn't you tell us this? This is a, you know, and you know, even more vehement than that, because Hoekstra has accused the CIA, he's the ranking Republican,
yep,
has accused the CIA of lying publicly.
Yep.
So I don't know.
Yep.
Now all of a sudden they have a new line on it.
Yep, I need to get a reality check every now and again from you, or as I call you, the rockin' Congresswoman from Illinois, Representative Jan Schakowsky.
Still wish she'd be Senator Schakowsky.
Oh,
but
thank you.
No, it's another of my dreams that have died. But you're my favorite Democrat on TV besides me. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for taking time for us,
okay,
as always.
Thanks.
All right.
No one remember the Church Committee from 1975 investigating intelligence activities? I mean, of course the CIA lies. That's what they do.
Yeah. 42 minutes after the hour, back with more of the Sonia Sotomayor hearings live as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
What in the name of holy hell is going on here?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it, 47 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Lou in South Carolina on Senator Jeff Sessions. Hello, Lou.
Hello there. You know, I consider myself a rational human being. I listen to both sides, and I come to my own conclusions. But I can't help it but come to the conclusion that the Republican Party has so been taken over by the conservative white male. Now, this guy, Jeff Sessions, he's prosecuted civil rights activists.
Yep.
He fought against the Voting Rights Act. which allowed blacks to vote in Alabama, and then he becomes a judge, and heaven forbid anybody who came before him who has a, who's of my persuasion. It's as though they basically live in a world where it's do as I say, not as I do, whether it's Sessions or if it's William Bennett preaching morality and then being a gambleholic, or Rush Limbaugh talking law and order and then saying it's made up by OxyContin that he abused to the point of becoming deaf. Or Sarah Palin wagging her finger about preaching abstinence while her underage daughter's pregnant.
Yep.
Or the South Carolina governor, you know, somehow saying that basically they all imply if you're Republican, you believe in family values and you're better than us.
Yep.
And he runs off to his miss and so on and so on. So I can only conclude that these people are so either arrogant that they basically just say, feel like they establish the rules and they decide.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're insane.
Mm-hmm. Although, you know, one thing, Lou, must be said about Governor Sanford, and that is he's much, much nicer to Hispanic women than Jeff Sessions is. All right. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of, this is Senator Jeff Sessions from yesterday.
I want to be clear.
Mm-hmm.
I will not vote for, and no senator should vote for,
no.
an individual nominated by any president who is not fully committed to fairness and impartiality toward every person who appears before them.
Mm. Would you like the fun facts, and for those of you that have just tuned in on Senator Jeff Sessions?
Sure.
Kind of puzzling, conservatives have let him be the public face of opposition against the first Latina nominated to the Supreme Court, and especially in light of his own checkered history with race.
So
it's being
speak.
Referred to. His nomination to the federal bench was rejected by the Senate because of his deep-seated hostility to the very notion of civil rights.
Hmm.
He was prejudiced against the very notion of civil rights.
That's right.
In comments that are strikingly similar to his recent attacks on the Puerto Rican Legal Defense Fund, Sessions attacked the NAACP as un-American and communist-inspired organization that forced civil rights down the throats of people. He conducted a tenuous criminal investigation into voting rights advocates that registered African Americans to vote, an investigation that culminated in an unsuccessful prosecution against a former aide to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Additionally, an African American attorney who once worked for Sessions testified at his hearings that Sessions said that he used to think the KKK were okay until he found out that some of them were pot smokers. It was that very same attorney that also recalled being called boy by Sessions and being told to be careful what you say to white folks after Sessions overheard him chastising a white secretary. That's the guy spearheading the whole attacks on racism.
Yeah.
On Sonia Sotomayor. By the way, we had the legal policy analyst. He's not an animist. He's an
animist. He might be an animist.
For the Center for American
Animalist.
Progress. But they put out a great, you know, because basically the Republicans are going with five myths.
Yes.
Against Sonia Sotomayor, and it's easy to shoot them down. Myth number one, she bent the law to benefit minority firefighters. Fact, Sotomayor followed then-existing law when she decided the Ricci firefighters case. The Supreme Court's 5-4 decision reversing her created a new law. That would be judicial activism.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Myth number two, Sotomayor hostile to the Second Amendment. Fact, Sotomayor followed a binding Supreme Court precedent when she rejected a Second Amendment challenge to New York state law. Myth number three, she's hostile to property rights. Fact, Sotomayor rejected a land developer's claim because the developer waited until 2 years after the statute of limitations had passed to file his claim. That's weird. It's almost like she's following the law in some weird way. Myth number four, Sotomayor rewrote the Voting Rights Act to benefit felons. Fact, Sotomayor criticized her colleagues for inventing a new exception to the federal voting rights law out of thin air. Myth number five, Sotomayor sat on the board of an extreme organization, the Puerto Rican League. Okay. Sotomayor sat on the board of a highly regarded nonprofit organization that is under attack by a right-wing senator with a history of unfounded allegations mm-hmm. against civil rights organizations. The aforenamed Jeff Sessions.
Go make me a quesadilla, Esmeralda.
I'm sorry, he's a racist.
Esperanza,
racist
whatever
F.
your name is. Did you know that other guy was a Puerto Rican, too? You folks all hang together, right?
Okay, I don't think I'm the only one that's going to have noticed that tomorrow,
yeah.
that he had to point out to her that another judge that she worked with was also Puerto
yeah.
Rican, like her.
So, therefore...
And how come you didn't agree with him?
Being a Puerto Rican.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Wow.
He really did say
her
that.
Face while talking to Jeff Sessions is the picture of judicial restraint.
Wow.
Oh.
The Republicans are just
wow.
immolating themselves.
This is what's the...
They're wasting whatever little political capital right. they have mm-hmm. by beating down this woman with racist attacks.
And yeah. they're catering to the extreme right-wing lunatic fringe of the Republican Party who can't win them elections.
Hey, funny you should bring that up. I was just going to mention Senator Sam Brownback, Republican of Kansas.
He's a freak.
He's an ardent anti-abortion activist. He's worried the Obama administration's loosening of restrictions on stem cell research will result in the creation of a new race of bioengineered human animals.
Oh, shut up.
Human-animal hybrids.
Oh, no.
Human-animal hybrid freaks. The bill would ban the creation of, quote, part human, part animal creatures, which are created in laboratories and blur the line between species.
Like
human-animal hybrids.
Like mm-hmm. mermaids and centaurs?
Yes, mm-hmm. exactly.
Yes.
So, okay.
And angry leprechauns like Jeff Sessions.
You figured it out. I am Dr. Moreau.
Maybe he's getting money from the anti-mermaid lobby.
I can create mermaids. Yes, I can. Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Oh, boy.
Wow. Yes, please run, Sarah Palin.
You know what? If the Democrats had any sense of humor, they would give him a hearing on that, and they would invite Daryl Hannah to testify.
Yeah.
In the mermaid costume.
Not to mock him to his face or anything.
And whoever played the centaur in Clash of the Titans.
Right.
All right. Judge Sotomayor yesterday.
The task of a judge is not to make law. It is to apply the law. And it is clear, I believe, that my record in two courts reflects my rigorous commitment to interpreting the Constitution according to its terms.
Thank you. Her record. That's what mm-hmm. people are looking at. Lindsey Graham yesterday said he wouldn't vote for Sotomayor if he applied the same standard Obama applied. They keep trying to call it the Obama standard.
Yeah.
Again, he. And by the way, let me go on saying on record as saying Senator Obama right again. He was right again about Alito and the other people that he voted against. They have turned out to be. I think who was it yesterday? Ben Nelson. Or no, excuse me. I'm sorry. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse said the current court has not kept the promises of modesty or humility made when President Bush nominated Justices Roberts or Alito.
Huh.
Yeah, that's been an activist court. And once again, Obama was right about that. But he was not basing it on, you know, comments they'd made out of context in a speech 15 years earlier. He was looking at their record. Orrin Hatch did it again. He called Barack Obama's so-called empathy standard Monday, noting at the start of the confirmation hearings that Republican candidates with compelling life stories were never given similar consideration by Democrats during their respective hearings. Again, it was their records,
yep.
not their life story that was you know, what they were being judged on. Senator Dianne Feinstein yesterday at the...
If confirmed, you will join the Supreme Court with more federal judicial experience than any justice in the past 100 years.
Sonia Sotomayor vowed loyalty to the impartiality of our justice system yesterday, confronting Republicans at Senate hearings suffused with racial politics. Thank you, Jeff Sessions. Thank you. Sotomayor spoke after listening for hours as Republicans questioned her impartiality and accused Obama of adhering to a double standard and blah, 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 blah. Senator Al Franken.
Yeah. This is the first official thing that he's done.
I am the senator who most recently took the oath of office. Last Tuesday, I swore to support and defend the Constitution of the United States and to bear true faith and allegiance to it. I take this oath very seriously.
Yeah.
Hello.
Some of the pundits on CNN yesterday were wondering why he wasn't cracking jokes. I'm like, he's a senator.
He's in a Supreme Court nomination hearing.
Exactly.
Come on, where are the jokes?
Where's his props?
Get over it.
57 minutes after the hour, back with Tinsel Talk and more of the Sonia Sotomayor hearings live here on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
I'm walking on sunshine. Whoa, I'm walking on sunshine. Whoa, and I'm
is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. StephanieMiller.com, the website. Check it out. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris Lavoie, voice Dee Dee, Jim Ward, me, Stephanie Miller. This hour of the Stephanie Miller Show brought to you by Pontiac. The Pontiac summer closeout is here. Hurry to get the Pontiac you want before they're gone, like the 09 G6, the powerful G8, or the five-door Pontiac Vibe. Visit PontiacDealer.com. Take delivery by 7/31/09. See dealer for details. Thank you. Okay, the Sonia Sotomayor hearings proceed apace. Yesterday, Senator Chuck Schumer...
Given her extensive and even-handed record, I'm not sure how any member of this panel can sit here today and seriously suggest that she comes to the bench with a personal agenda.
Except for professional pantywaist Senator Lindsey Graham.
Fraud.
I think made a somewhat... He alternated racist statements with Jeff Sessions with this sexist statement.
Unless you have a complete meltdown, you're going to get confirmed.
Well, I don't know that that was sexist.
I'm going to go with it. It was.
Oh.
Okay. Here is Bill O'Reilly saying something completely untrue.
What?
Hmm?
Bill O'Reilly?
Out of six cases, Judge Sotomayor's rulings have been overturned 4 times by the Supreme Court.
Hmm.
That's not a good record.
Hmm.
I believe she's an honest woman.
Hmm.
And maybe she's just made a few mistakes.
Hmm.
Maybe. But if she turns out to be another Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the United States of America will take a huge turn for the worse. We need judges who will treat all Americans the same way.
Mm.
Period.
Ah, I see.
Like
well,
Jeff
then
Sessions, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I guess even though she was overturned less than, let's say, Alito or Lear Roberts. Or, okay. Wow, it's that Rush Limbaugh talking point.
Yes.
Oh. Okay, and Levi Johnson.
Oh,
Johnston.
Johnston, once again.
He was on the Today Show yesterday.
I know there's been talk about it'd be nice to just take the money and run. Or
that's
do,
what she said.
Yeah, yeah, that's, yeah, and do it like a reality show maybe or just something easier.
No.
Wow, he's eloquent.
Yes. I'm a celebrity. Get me out of Alaska.
Did you see the New York Times story? The worst thing is she was so stressed out she needed hair help.
She needed what?
Hair help. She needed emergency hair help. Her hair thinned to the point where she needed emergency help from her hairdresser.
Hmm.
I'm guessing it's extensions. Hmm. All right, let's...
She also needed help with that camel toe that she had in Runner's World magazine.
Really?
Hmm. Oh, Chris.
Yes, there's a picture of her in Runner's World magazine wearing, short shorts. And,
damn.
Yeah.
What? Let's check some other
what, Stephanie?
Entertainment news, shall we?
Going around the internet.
It's time for Tinsel Talk. Let's find out what's going on in Hollywood with Stephanie Miller.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Our top story, Mel Gibson's Russian girlfriend, Oksana Grigorieva. Might be pregnant with the superstar's child, but she still hasn't given up on becoming a pop star. She's just released her second music video in the space of a month. It was directed by Mel Gibson himself.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
Can't get enough of Mel Gibson's drunken anti-Semitic rants? Then you'll love the debut album from his crazy Cossack girlfriend, Oksana Grigorieva. She covers all your favorites, from Lionel Richie, Say Jules, Say Me, to Frankie Valli, Can't Take My Eyes Off of Jules, to Taylor Dane, Blame It on the Jews, and from the hit Broadway musical Phantom of the Opera, That's All I Ask of Jews, to the Beatles, Hey Jew, Don't Make It Bad. You'll also get All the Young Jews, Jew Make Me Feel Like Dancing, Jew Don't Know Me, Jew Do You Love, Jew Ought to Know, and Jews Lost That Loving Feeling. And if you call in the next 5 minutes, you'll get Jeff Sessions' smash hit, Songs to Lynch By, including his mega hit, The Horse Vessel Song for Banjo and Jew's Harp. They find a hole to your atheist schloss and Zika. Call now.
Well, that was mildly disturbing.
It's very disturbing.
It's a hook.
And finally, it's official, Chris. You already know this,
what?
But cats do control humans, according to a new study.
Yes, they do.
Jazz owns you.
Just look at my hands.
I know.
And the blood.
If you've ever wondered who's in control, you or your cat, a new study points to the obvious. It's your cat.
Yep.
Household cats exercise this control with a certain type of urgent-sounding, high-pitched meow, according to the findings. The meow is actually a purr mixed with a high-pitched cry. While people usually think of a cat purring as a sign of happiness, some cats make this purr cry sound when they want to be fed. The study showed that humans find these mixed calls annoying and difficult to ignore.
Yeah, I was sitting at the computer yesterday doing work for this very show, and Jazz sat behind me just going, meow, Meow. 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 Just wanting to be fed. And I'm like, it's not dinner time yet. God.
My friend went out of town for a couple days, and her kitty did diarrhea on her pillow. Because that's just to show you who's who and what's what.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you leave, apparently.
Ooh. Yeah.
The researcher said she thinks this cry occurs at a low level in cats' normal purring, but we think that cats learn to dramatically exaggerate it when it proves effective in generating a response from humans. Little drama queens, all of them.
Yeah.
All right, we have
Morris the cat. had a comment. Should we let the music establish itself? No, no. Of course we control our humans. Was there ever any doubt? We've got them wrapped around our little paws. Researchers are finally figuring out how we do it. It's sort of a combination of a high-pitched meow combined with a purr. It's a bit like playing the harmonica and the bagpipes at the same time. What these geniuses haven't figured out is exactly what we're saying. It's kind of a backwards masking. Beneath the, you'll pardon the pun, caterwauling, we're actually sending subliminal messages to our humans' frankly wildly overrated cerebral cortices. Why, just this morning I told my food spigot, hey, you fat bitch, get your snout out of the trough and get me some mackerel pronto, or I swear I'll pee all over your new $3,000 couch. How's that going to go over your next soiree, you whore?
Oh, gee.
Of course, what she heard was, meow, and gave me that aw face along with the catch of the day. What a bunch of chumps. I gotta go. So much napping to do, so little time. Ciao.
That's from Cats, see the song. That's all for Tinsel Talk. I'm here all week. Tell your friends.
Yeah. If the only version we had was Barry Manilow, though. I'm
great.
Like,
even
damn.
Better.
Where's my Betty Buckley song
catalog
when I need it?
Or at least Barbara Streisand. She had a hit with the song.
If you'd like more Jim Ward fault roles,
check out Jim Ward's Apocryphal But True, for which there is a tile ad on the Stephanie Miller website, stephaniemiller.com. And buy the album, why don't you?
Can I have some love music, please? The couple in the NASA triangle to wed. You remember?
Oh.
Diaper astronaut.
Is she going to wear the depends
Spacey
at the wedding?
Spacey McPee Pants.
Yes.
The diaper astronaut. Uh-huh.
Oh.
A former space... Not her, the other woman. Not the diaper woman.
Not the crazy woman.
No.
Oh, okay.
A former space shuttle astronaut and a woman who the authorities say was the target of a widely publicized kidnapping attempt by a romantic rival for the astronaut's attention, planning to get married. Ms. Shipman and Mr. Ofeline, remember them?
Yeah.
They first came to public attention when Lisa Nowak, the aforementioned Spacey McPee Pants.
No, she's whack. All right.
Uh-huh.
There's no negating the whack factor.
You know the only thing that I needed to find out, Chris?
What was
I
that?
Wanted to be reminded of what was in her trunk.
Oh.
And here it is. Inside the bag she was carrying when she went in the diaper to kidnap the other woman was a trench coat, a steel mallet, a folding knife with a 4-inch blade, 3 to 4 inches of rubber tubing, a large plastic garbage bag, $600 in cash.
Exploding birdseed, and Acme rocket skates.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep. And the movable hole in the mountain.
Yes, the portable hole.
Gotta get me one of those.
Oh, Lord. Now I need, I guess, breakup music, because this is... You've heard the story by now, Jim. The gay penguins have broken up.
Oh, no.
Yeah, by that homewrecker penguin, Linda. Oh. Have you heard this story?
That whore.
Oh.
She's a bitch whore from hell. What?
Linda has...
Breakup music?
Oh, well, you can give me love music, because it was a love story until Linda came on the scene. Until Linda waddled her fat ass into the scene. Linda the penguin has split up two male penguins who lived as a nesting couple for 6 years at the San Francisco Zoo, caretakers said. You remember Harry and Pepper.
Sure.
They've been so content together they were allowed to incubate and hatch an egg. Laid by another penguin last year. Of all the parents that year, they were the best. They took very good care of their chicks, said the zookeeper. Enter Linda. She was a widow. At least that was her story.
Oh, no.
Who began courting Harry in her partner's old burrow. What a whore! Slut! Look at her! Shortly after...
Slut! She's a slut! Look at her! Slut.
Walking in an old ratty mini dress, cigarette dangling from her from her lips. Yeah, who wants this?
The zookeeper said, Linda seems conniving. She's got her plan. I don't think she was wanting to be a single girl for too long. Though Harry and Linda have been nesting in recent months, molting season in late summer tends to reshuffle couples. It'll be interesting to see if Harry spends any of that time with Pepper. Yeah, he can't quit him.
No.
He cannot quit him. Harry will never quit Pepper. He's faking it. By the way.
What?
Hilarious D-listed's take on the gay penguins breakup.
Yeah.
They write, remember Harry on Pepper? They're the dude penguins who fell madly in love,
Harry on Pepper?
Oh. For 6 years, they were just like any other happy, normal gay couple. They spent their weekends looking at model homes for fun, hosted Golden Girls-themed cocktail parties, and even raised a baby penguin together. While the gay penguin love affair of our time has ended, it's all because of a home-wrecking slut whore skank bitch named Linda. The San Francisco Examiner says that Linda has stolen Harry from Pepper. Linda is the Sienna Miller of the penguin world. Or maybe she's more like Eliza Minnelli. Linda has quite the reputation around these parts as a fish-digging skeezer. A few years ago, Linda left her man for a much older penguin named Fig. Linda started rubbing her ice-cold crotch all over Fig just a few hours.
Oh, no!
After his woman died, Fig went off to the fake iceberg in the sky this year. A few weeks later, Harry was seen hanging out in Linda's burrow. You know that shameless whore Linda tricked Harry into going into her burrow by telling him she just got the entire last season of Ab Fab on DVD. We all hate Linda.
Yeah.
Oh. All right, Jim, here's a squeezy stack for you. Ava Longoria Parker likes being tied up during sex.
Yeah. Hey, now. My.
She revealed her most satisfying lovemaking sessions involve her being restrained.
How desperate are you?
She revealed, I'm not averse to being tied up with silk scarves. I like a man to take charge. There's something very sexy about being submissive. Or Exhibit B is Mel B, the former Scary Spice, Jim. She reveals that her husband's the only person that she's ever been in a relationship with who could match her sex drive. She said, on top of all my exercise, I have sex with him 5 times a day.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Maybe that has something to do with it. I have to admit I'm a nymphomaniac with him. It's sexercise. Trademark, Scary Spice. Sexercise.
Wow. Something tells me she didn't do it that often with Eddie Murphy.
You don't know that to be
what?
True. What? All right. 20 minutes after the hour, back with more of the Sonia Sotomayor Supreme Court nomination hearings as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Unfreaking believable.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 23 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Now the words that strike terror in listeners' hearts everywhere. It's right-wing Jan in Amherst up the transit from Mama's hometown of Lackport. Hey, Jan.
Hey, Steph. How you doing?
Good, honey. Jan, did you hear us shoot down your ridiculous Rush Limbaugh talking point about that she's been overturned 60% of the time on by the Supreme Court?
Yeah, I thought I'd lighten it up today.
Oh, you know, okay.
No, listen, I may have the official global warming or climate change denier of the staff.
Yep.
You are the official Johnny Pontillo denier of the Stephanie Miller Show. He is very hurt. Now, listen, you were mentioning
John Pontillo claims that I did. I reached some base with him in high school at Pontillo's Pizzeria in Lockport, and I don't remember.
I never said anything.
All right. But go
anyway,
ahead. Your thoughts on these Sotomayor hearings.
Listen, she is so boring. She just drones on and on.
Yeah, blah, 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 all that book learning.
No, listen, this is a different take. She's just very boring. But the thing that prompted me to call is that you're a dog person, right? You had this cat story. You know why they know that dogs are man's best friend?
How?
Well, you take your wife and your dog and lock them in the trunk for an hour. You open it up in an hour and look who's happy to see you.
Wow, that's funny. Some of that suffocating your wife story. Okay,
yeah.
Humor. All right. She's too boring, Jim. That's the latest talking point. I guess that's all they're left with.
Oh,
she's
not
wow.
Scintillating.
Oh, and John
blah,
Roberts precedent. Was a barrel of laughs.
Blah, blah, judicial theory, precedent, blah, blah. Okay, I'm guessing the same thing was in John's thought bubble as in Senator Sessions, as she was droning on, as it were, about case law.
Oh, God, I'll make me a quesadilla, Esperanza.
We don't know that for sure. We just based on his history.
Yeah.
We're pretty sure that's
as a racist, we think that.
How come you didn't agree with that other Puerto Rican? I mean, y'all think alike, right?
He did actually say that. I have got to hear that audio again, because it's another judge that she had worked with, that he said, he's a Puerto Rican like you, and you did not agree with him. Like, what was the point of pointing out that he, first of all,
what is his background?
She knows that, you moron.
What does his background have to do with anything?
Yeah. Wow. All right. Senator Pat Leahy yesterday about Judge Sotomayor.
She understands there's not one law for one race or another. There's not one law for one color or another. There's not one law for rich and a different one for poor. There's only one law.
Skip to the noted Pennsylvania Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, who talked about when Senator Obama was voting.
I can assure you that if I applied Senator Obama's standard to your nomination, I wouldn't vote for you.
Yeah, well, guess what?
Computer says none.
That's not true, because he was looking at people's records that he obviously disagreed with. It was not what they're trying to do to her, which is, you know, take out of context comments. And by the way, Jim, I thought she explained it very well, that if you looked at the whole comment in context, she was saying exactly the opposite of what they're trying to imply she was saying. Senator, this is where Senator Lindsey Graham calls her a Hispanic element.
The Hispanic element of this hearing is important, but I don't want it to be lost that this is mostly about liberal and conservative politics more than it is anything else. And having said that, there are some of my colleagues on the other side that voted for Judge Robertson Alito, knowing they would not have chosen either one of those. And I will remember that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then what did Jeff Sessions call the NAACP was a communist organization?
And communist inspired. Yes. Mm-hmm. Forcing civil rights down the throats of people.
Yes.
Yeah. He also...
much like the activist, the scary activist Puerto Rican Legal Defense Fund.
Your organization argued for quotas when it came to hiring. I just want my colleagues to understand that there can be no more liberal group, in my opinion, than the Puerto Rican Defense Legal Fund when it came to advocacy. And what I hope is if we ever get a conservative president and they nominate someone who has an equal passion on the other side, that we will not forget this moment, that you could be the NRA general counsel and still be a good lawyer.
Actually, you do have a conservative president now. Old school conservative.
Yeah.
He's not a right winger, but he's not a raving liberal by any stretch of the imagination.
Shall we wish he had appointed a left-wing liberal activist? But, you know, I think that's why even Fox News is advising the Republicans not to, you know, they have dwindling credibility as it is to waste this, because A, she's going to get confirmed, and B, as we've said, she's not going to affect the balance on the court at all. You know, Souter was the liberal wing. We can only hope she'll be as liberal as Souter was. 28 minutes after the hour. Back with more on the Sotomayor hearings on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
I know you're humiliated, but getting drunk is not the answer.
Come up with a better one. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 33 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number toll free from anywhere. We rejoin the Sonia Sotomayor hearings live.
Regulation it has in place. And I am, I believe that the question there was whether or not a prohibition against felons possessing firearms was that question, if my memory serves me correctly, if it doesn't. But even Justice Scalia, in the majority opinion in Heller, recognized that that was a rational basis regulation for a state under all circumstances, whether or not there was a Second Amendment right.
Well, in the District of Columbia versus Heller, the Supreme Court observed that, quote, it has always been widely understood that the Second Amendment, like the First and Fourth Amendments, codified a pre-existing right, unquote. And the court also observed this, quote, by the time of the founding, the right to have arms had become fundamental for English subjects, unquote. Now, the court also described the right to bear arms as a natural right. Do you recall that from that decision?
I do remember that discussion.
All right. In what way does the court's observation that the Second Amendment codified a pre-existing fundamental right to bear arms affect your conclusion that the Second Amendment does not protect a fundamental right?
My conclusion in the Maloney case or in the U.S. Sanchez-Villar was based on precedent and the holding of precedence that the Second Circuit did not apply.
You judicial activist, Orrin Hatch.
The question...
Excuse me, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. What's your understanding of the test or standard the Supreme Court has used to determine whether a right should be considered fundamental? I'm not asking a hypothetical here. I'm only asking about what the Supreme Court has said in the past on this question. I recall, for instance, the court emphasizing that a right must be deeply rooted in our nation's history and tradition, that it is necessary to an Anglo-American regime of ordered liberty, or that it is an enduring American tradition. I think I've cited that pretty accurately on what the court has held with regard to what is a fundamental right. Now, those are different formulations from the Supreme Court's decisions, but I think the common thread there is obvious. Now, is that your understanding of how the Supreme Court has evaluated whether a right should be deemed fundamental?
The Supreme Court's decision with respect to the Second Circuit incorporation, Second Amendment incorporation doctrine is reliant on old precedent of the court, and
right.
I don't mean to use that as precedent that doesn't bind when I call it old. I'm talking about precedent that was passed in the 19th century. Since that time, there is no question that different cases addressing different amendments of the Constitution have applied a different framework. And whether that framework and the language you quoted are precise or not, I haven't examined that framework in a while to know if that language is precise or not. I'm not suggesting it's not, Senator. I just can't affirm that description. My point is, however, that once there's Supreme Court precedent directly on point and Second Circuit precedent directly on point on a question, which there is on this incorporation doctrine and how it uses the word fundamental, then my panel, which was unanimous on this point, there were two other judges and at least one other panel on the Seventh Circuit by Judge Easterbrook, has agreed that once you have settled precedent in an area, then on a precise question, then the Supreme Court has to look at that. And under the deference one gives
she's like
to
smart and all.
I'm just
going to
say, she's running circles around him mentally. He's got little animated Tweety birds going around his
older precedent.
All right. By the way, let's break briefly because the Stephanie Miller Show needs to issue an important, more important, Chris, than the Supreme Court nomination hearings, an important correction. The Stephanie Miller Show wishes to apologize. Chris said that the picture of Sarah Palin in, Runner's World?
Yes.
She appeared to have a camel toe.
Yes, which I've found out that you can say on the air.
Ron in Minnesota says, sorry, Chris, in Alaska it's actually referred to as a moose knuckle.
You betcha.
Not a camel toe. We apologize. Stephanie Miller Show apologizes for the error. Scott in Massachusetts, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show on this on Sotomayor hearings. Hello, Scott.
Yes, hello, Ms. Miller. How are you?
Crazy religious right-wing Scott. Hi, Scott.
I'd like to say, if I may, that I'm very unhappy that Sonia Mayor is going
to Sotomayor. That's not her name, Scott.
Sonia
Sotomayor. Probably will be put on the Supreme Court. Let's be honest. With affirmative action and reverse discrimination, you already have a black, Clarence Thomas is on the court. Now you're going to have a Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
You have Ginsburg, who's Jew, on the court.
A Jehu. Uh-huh.
And what I'm saying is that for a white person, a white Christian as myself, I feel that it's stacked against white people, not only the Supreme Court, mind you, but in light of what happened with Michael Jackson.
Actually, the majority is
you still got four white guys there.
White people are on their way out in this country. Our rights have been so demoralized.
What rights
we've
have
been marginalized. We've been disenfranchised
what rights
in this
have been
country.
Taken away.
Wait. I want to hear how Michael Jackson plays into this.
He plays into this a prominent role because you think that he was a god when he was a sick pervert. He we all know that he's black. It's what I call the Negroization of America, with Jesse Jackson and Oprah Winfrey and the obnoxious Reverend Al Sharpton. They ram it down your throat. I resent.
Oh, they're Negroism. They ram that down your throat.
Yes, I resent these blacks, Miss Miller. I resent them, and behind the blacks is stemming it all is a Jewish liberalism that wants to force equality and diversity and homosexual rights and lesbian rights. White people have.
You never answered for me how lesbian rights are different than homosexual rights.
They're both men with men or women with women, but. Lesbians, they're both sick. They're both perverted.
Mm.
And
but they're white people.
They destroyed this country. They fragged this nation.
What if they're white people, though?
What's that?
What if they're white lesbians?
They're sick as well.
Okay.
They're all sick. It doesn't matter, black, white, whatever. They're all sick.
Right color, people. Wrong preference is what you're saying.
Yeah. They're a drag on our country. They made our nation depraved, and they've demoralized the status quo. There's no morality anymore. And it's just so sickening that I look at America today, and between the blacks and the homosexuals, white Christian America is on its way out. White people are cowardly. They're stupid. They're afraid to
speak. Well, you're proving your point this morning. Thank you, Scott. Thanks for proving your point. Thank you for your cowardice and stupidity, by the way, in proving your point. Okay, Dave in Buffalo, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Good morning, Mama.
Hello, Dave.
That dude needs therapy. I'm going to dump what I said about empathy earlier in Sotomayor, what I told Rebecca. The fact is, if we used Scott's methodology, then half the Supreme Court would be women. About four of them might be white guys, but two of those would be Jews. Two of them, 20% of the population is Hispanic, so at least two of them would be Hispanic, and maybe two more would be black males. So, and then everybody, by proportion of population, would be equally treated by the Supreme Court, if we're going to go with Scott's mind thing, whatever it is.
Yes, mind, whatever. If you can refer to anything to do with Scott as a mind, yes.
Right. Thank you.
All right. All right. Thank you, Dave. Let's go to Ken in Cleveland. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, Ken.
Mind thing.
Hello, Ken.
No. Good morning. Yeah, a twofer show today. You got Jan from Lackport and Crazy Right Wing Scott. What a great day. Mm.
Yes.
But I just wanted to weigh in on the Sotomayor thing. And it's obvious that all these conservatives are showing their racism because they have to dig so deeply to find something what they perceive to be racist about her. After hours and hours of transcripts and whatever for, that she's spoke upon, they have to find the one little thing where she talks about her ethnicity and exploit it for everything they can. Whereas if you look at the racism that's gone on the right, side of the aisle, you don't have to really look too hard for that.
Yeah. Yep.
So.
Yep, absolutely. All right, let's go to Anthony in Seattle with some thoughts on Crazy Religious Right Wing Scott. Hello, Anthony.
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, is this Stephanie?
Yes.
Oh, hey, Stephanie.
Oh, my gosh, what a surprise.
I just want to say that right-wing caller that just called.
Yes.
He just really, I don't know, he seemed to be on a theme there when he was talking about Michael Jackson, and then he was saying that as a Negro he was trying to shove something down our throats. And as a gay man, I find it quite, I don't know how this right-wing religious person could have more insight into something being shoved down our throats.
Scott's got a lot of issues.
Scott's got a few issues. I think he meant that Oprah and Michael Jackson and others are shoving their
the choice of words.
Blackness in your face and some weird.
Using the term shoving down your throat with
I understand.
The homos.
Okay. Yeah. 43 minutes after the. Oh, right.
What?
All right. 43 minutes after the hour. Back with the some more live Sonia Sotomayor hearings as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh my, how ruthlessly absurd.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 48 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Michael in Plano, Texas. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hello Mike.
Hello, Louise. How are you?
Louise? All right, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Hey, listen, it is always so enjoyable listening to crazy right-wing Scott from either Boston or Cape Cod.
Yes.
And I think it's 2 points. I think it's pretty obvious that Scott hates everybody, including himself now.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the second thing, I really do want to thank Scott for helping to improve my vocabulary this morning. I just learned a new phrase of which I may be a part of, and that is the negrolization of America?
Yes.
That's a new one on me.
Yeah, the negrotization. Uh-huh.
Enjoy.
Okay, let's go to Tony in Cincinnati. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hi, Tony.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, go ahead.
I just want to say I find it hard to understand how the right wing is really on the way out, the Republicans are on the way out, with such high-quality intellectual speakers like Scott representing them. It's really surprising to me that they're not doing well right now.
It's hard they're not. It's surprising they're not appealing to a larger segment of the population.
It's a really big tent,
you know? Yeah, it's a big tent.
I blame the negrolization of America.
Yeah.
Starting with those jazz musicians with their jazz cigarettes.
Mm. Geraldine in Albuquerque, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hi, Stephanie. I just have a quick comment to make. I've been wanting to call you for a long time regarding this gay stuff and the Negro stuff. Well, you know, I come from a family who my father's generation was raised very prejudiced. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, my cousin married a black guy. My uncle did not talk to her for 3 years.
Oh, my God.
She then proceeded to have a child and turned my uncle totally the opposite way, you know. He now has a grandbaby that is biracial and loves her to death. We love her, and has changed his viewpoint on being prejudiced. And also on the gay thing, you know, I have a gay niece and a gay nephew, and he was, gay from the time he was a toddler. He liked putting fingernail polish, playing with dolls. He didn't want to be out there playing with trucks.
That's a little tip, perhaps.
Yeah, and, you know, we saw him grow up. I mean, we knew he was gay since he was a baby. So what makes...
I was going to say a red flag, but maybe a pink flag. A rainbow flag. Yeah.
Well, you know, what makes the Christian world, the Mormons, Jew, black, white, whatever you are, think that they're exempt from having a gay child, a gay grandbaby?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it can happen to anyone, and until you're in those shoes, I mean, you just don't know how hurtful it is to hear people.
That's right. You walk a mile in those light loafers before you,
Stop it, Stephanie!
What? Is Jim Ward allowed to say what a lesbian Twitter is?
No!
Why not?
Because!
It's funny!
I said
no,
it's
not.
Off the air.
So?
I can't say it now.
Okay, you can figure it out. Let's go to Tony in Los Angeles. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. It's a body part. What's wrong with that? You said camel toe earlier.
Well, yeah, but...
Excuse me, Tony. We're having a little family spat. Go ahead.
No, I was moving on.
Tony, do you think it's okay to say clitter? I think so. Go ahead, Tony.
Whatever.
It's not meant for air.
I was just going to say, the dude, you know, every human being on the face of Earth has black female DNA. So, you know,
that's
who's
right.
Your mama, Chris?
And, there you go.
In the words of Barack, hello.
All right.
See you later.
She's giddy this morning. Yeah. Justin in Los Angeles on the Sotomayor hearings. Hello, Justin.
Hey, Steph. I just wanted to remind you in the MOOCs that Al Franken gets to ask Sotomayor questions today, and I thought it was interesting because we've only heard about Al's legal battles and with, you know, the tool from Minnesota Norm, and I think it'd be really interesting to see what he has to say and the questions he has.
Well, yeah, because he's the only non-lawyer, Justin, and he said that he wants to serve as the people's proxy, you know, as you know, what a normal person would ask her. So I look forward to that, too, and to Bill O'Reilly's head exploding. Ha, 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 ha. Huh. Interesting thought from Bill O'Reilly yesterday.
I think everybody has to understand where we are as a nation. There are many people on the left and the right who don't want the Constitution upheld any longer. They want an imposition of their ideology on the entire country. That's what we're talking about here. Mm. And unfortunately, the Democratic Party now controls 60 votes in the Senate. Mm. And it is, I think, Sotomayor is going to be confirmed.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
interesting. He's talking about it's the left that doesn't want the Constitution upheld.
Yeah.
And it's actually the Roberts Court that has been overturning
the Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Precedent. Just FYI. Okay, our friend Sean Hannity on the dreaded E word.
Empathy, doesn't that suggest that we basically, I'm sympathetic. I have empathy towards you, but not somebody else. That goes away from the idea.
Having some empathy on the court.
Here's the problem. No, but you're not applying equal justice under the law.
Computer says no.
Yeah, no, empathy means that you could have empathy toward both parties,
right.
Actually.
Yes.
That would just be a quality that someone with a soul might recognize. Present company accepted. Okay, let's. Orrin Hatch, Senator Hatch, still questioning Sonia Sotomayor. Let's go up to a little bit live.
I can't speak for him. I know that the panel.
I'm just asking you to speak for you. Look, when the Supreme Court reversed you, Justice Kennedy wrote, quote, "This action presents two provisions of Title VII to be interpreted and reconciled with few, if any, precedents in the courts of appeals discussing the issue." Unquote. He was referring to the lack of precedent anywhere in the country, not just the Second Circuit. Was he wrong?
He was talking about whether I understood him to be talking about not whether the precedent that existed would have determined the outcome as the panel did, but whether the court should be looking at these two provisions in a different way to establish a choice, a different choice in considerations by the city. As I indicated, that argument about what new standard or new approach to the questions that the city should consider before it denies certification of a test, yes, had not been addressed by other courts, but the ability of a city, when presented with a prima facie case, to determine whether or not it would attempt to reach a non-disparate impact.
Wow.
Had
all
been
right.
Recognized.
You know what? It's going to surprise you, Jim, but I think Karl Rove is wrong. She appears to be quite smart to me. Huh. Interesting. I thought it was easy to get to the top of your class at wherever she went, Harvard, Princeton, whatever.
Although when you use words like prima facie, that's when you lose me. Sorry.
You
know, legal jargon.
You have the same Tweety birds around your head that Orrin Hatch does.
Yep.
Tweet, 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 tweet. I don't get it. Can I have my fine American music? This will be the next hilarious opportunity for Republican racism in a Senate confirmation hearing. Did you see the nomination for a Surgeon General? Did you see her yesterday? Dr. Regina Benjamin. Wow. President Obama turned to the Deep South for the next Surgeon General, choosing a rural Alabama family physician who made headlines with fierce determination to rebuild her nonprofit medical clinic in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. She is awesome. I don't know if you've seen her. She's a country doctor. She makes house calls. She doesn't turn away patients who can't pay.
Very cool.
Very communistical, you know. Compelling story. Her father died with diabetes and high blood pressure. Her only brother of HIV. Her mother of lung cancer.
Oh, wow.
An uncle is now on oxygen as a result because he was also a smoker. She said yesterday, "I cannot change my family's past, but I can be a voice in the movement to improve our nation's health care and our nation's health. I want to be sure that no one falls through the cracks as we improve our health care system." She made headlines in the wake of Katrina as photographs show her laying out patient charts to bake in the sun. And lamenting the lack of pricey but more hurricane-resistant electronic records, her nonprofit clinic was rebuilt by volunteers. She told of a patient's desperation that she rebuilt again, recalling a woman who handed her an envelope with a $7 donation to help. She said, "If she can find $7, I can figure out the rest." She said last fall she received a Genius Award, money she said she would use to help finish the job. So we'll see what the Republicans have to say about that compelling life story. That's it for us. We will see you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.